This is Jody Stone on December 10th, 1986, interviewing Lester Amos Hoysroth, spelled H-O-Y-S-R-A-D for David, T for Thomas, who was born October 1st, 1933. Les, let's get the business about Oogie and Lester straightened out, because it's going to confuse people.
Mm-hmm.
How come Oogie?
Well, like I said, my name was, my mother called me Oogie.
Why?
Well, when I was about 2 or 3 years old, she gave me that name, and she said it was because we used to climb trees like monkeys and made sounds like ug ug, so she named me U-G-H-I-E. And then later on, it was changed around to Oogie.
When you got to school?
Yeah, when I got to school. They didn't call me Oogie anymore, they called me Oogie.
So when people say Oogie, that's Les.
That's Les.
Okay.
Oh, yes, I've gone through all my life with that name. So, and a lot of people still don't know who you're talking about if you say Les.
I know.
They really don't.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. Tell me about your father.
Well,
you were telling me about the rock.
Yes, the Hanging Rock.
Where is that?
That's in Hanging Rock Park,
which is
up behind the town hall, off Factory Street. And there's a huge rock there, which looks like, you know, you could push it over. And they told me one day he put a couple sticks of dynamite under it, and he went down on the drugstore steps and sat there. And when it went off, he said to all of them, "Well, what could that noise be?" And there he tried to blow up the rock, but you can't blow it up, apparently. You know, it's really, I don't know why it's sitting like that.
He sounds like a real character.
He was. They were characters. And I can remember my mother. You know, of course, he never worked.
Ever?
No, my father never worked. Most of the men, well, no, I shouldn't say most of them, but a lot of the men up that way didn't work. The women went out and worked.
Up what way?
Up Factory Street. But he used to come. He was a big drinker. He had his friends, Tom Malley and Jakey Holder and Danny Ashman, all the rest of them. They would get behind the lockup, or where the old lockup was, behind the town hall. There was a jail there years ago, and it was called the lockup.
Behind, by the cemetery.
Right, where you go up to Buddy Trotter's.
Mm-hmm.
That road was called the lockup. And they would get there drinking, and then they'd come up to my mother's, and they'd want her to cook something, and if they did, if she didn't, they would go out and they'd steal somebody's chickens. And they would come back, and a lot of times they'd just put them right in the oven, live. Feathers and all. And they would cook them just like that.
And eat them?
And then eat them, yeah. They would just put them right in the oven.
You saw this?
Oh, yes, as a child.
What was your dad's name?
Clayton Tripp.
And your mom?
My mother's name was Wilhelmina. Helen Wilhelmina, but everybody called her Mina.
What was her maiden name?
Brazen. Yeah, she was, of course, we used to talk about it because my mother was very proud of her ancestors, who were the old Marshalls, and from Virginia, and then she said they were the old Marshall family down there. And then I always talked to Tom Wagner, who's the other relation of the Loomises. Tom's name was Loomis. And then when he was adopted by Wagner, he changed it. But Tom was a cousin, and they founded the Loomis School. But they always called it Loomis. The name was Loomis. My mother, they lived up on, you know, that's an old family over, Windsor. But my mother and them always called it Loomis. They didn't call it Loomis. But, you know, that was the old name.
That's intriguing.
Yeah. And then Catherine tells me, Catherine Rohrbach, that her grandmother was a Heisman. So that's where, you know, we get talking about that.
So who changed it to Hoysroth?
I don't know. Well, of course, it was my grandfather. When my grandfather married my grandmother, Ostrander, you see.
No, I meant the pronunciation.
Oh, I don't know. We always say, I think you should probably say Hoysrat. That's probably the real name to pronounce, but we always said Hoysrat. Like when we would talk to Kenny Farwell, it's Farwell, but we always said Farwell. It was much easier. You know, everybody's name was just pronounced the way you could.
Yeah. Your mom came up from Virginia?
No. My mother was born here, but her family, they were, but they lived. Her great, I can remember my mother's grandmother, because she lived in 88, Wilhelmina Marshall, and she married a Brazy. But she used to sit at my Aunt Emma's house, and she was always rocking with a corncob, a clay pipe. She always had a little clay pipe she smoked. But
where did she live?
She lived, what they call Ragga Lane now. You go off Washington or Factory Street and down over the brook and up in the back where Emma Atkins and all the Marshalls, there are no houses up there anymore. George Speed, we lived there when we were kids. My grandfather, Brazy, Amos, I was named after two fathers, or two grandfathers, Lester Heisberg and Amos Brazy. And my father was supposed to get a keg of beer, but he never did, he said, if you name me. But my grandfather, Brazy, lived where you go up Bunker Hill and up to the mountain. He had a beautiful old house. There used to be a house in there, and then one night he was drinking and smoking in bed, and he caught fire and burnt down. And of course, everything my mother said they had went up in the fire. But I can remember, I was telling, these young people that when we were young, and my mother's building the little house where we live now, we've only lived there since 1941, up on Roaring Oaks. And she built that house. But we lived up on Factory Street, further up, in George Speed's old house. And in the winter, you didn't have heat, and everybody slept in one bed. That's the way, five children, you just slept in one bed, so to keep warm. And we walked from there down to the grammar school on Grove Street, and that's gone now, the grammar school we went to, where Mrs. McCone, she was our teacher. And my Aunt Emma Sr., who lived across the street, always made our lunches every day. And then we'd go over and bring them over, and everybody have a hot lunch. Then we always had Phil Warner. Phil was Don's brother, and the uncle to this Don Warner and Sharon. And Phil owned the knife handle factory up there where they, Mrs. McClure lives now.
Oh, Salisbury Artisans.
Salisbury Artisans, mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it was Salisbury Cutlery. And we always went down there, and Phil was there with his sister Mary and Lois. And we would always ride into town with Phil in his old truck. He had an old pickup truck. And we'd go down and he'd pick up the laundry at my Emma Sr., who did their laundry and a lot of people's laundry. And then we'd, once a year, he'd take us all to the mountain where the Warners had a camp at the second lake, we always called it, the first lake.
Upper lake.
The upper lake, And, Phil was a very, very kind person, really tried to. And later on, he sold most of the houses up that street to the people who lived in them. I mean, the Lovetts and the Farwells, and where Baz McClain lives, and the Marxes. All those houses belonged to, Phil Warner. And Phil let them all have them very cheap years ago. I think Phil was trying to make up for a lot of things that his father had done wrong. He was completely different than Don. Don was all right, other than he would drink with my father and the rest of them. And I was telling somebody one day about we used to always go to the Episcopal Church. My grandfather had studied to be an Episcopal minister. And then he married my mother's mother, and she was Catholic. Her name was Murray. She was French. And so then he became Catholic and was big in the Knights of Columbus. But every Christmas Eve, we would go to St. John's. My mother had been raised a Catholic, but we all go to the Congregational Church. But one Christmas Eve, my grandfather, Amos, and old Don Warner, they would come into the church, and they would begin to bless themselves. They'd kneel down by the pews and bless themselves, and then they couldn't get up because they were so drunk, the two of them. So then somebody would have to come along and help them both into the pews. But, you know, I can always remember seeing the two of them, and they would, and Don would come across the street from the old house, the old Bushnell Tavern, and I think he kept his liquor in his law office, and he's safe. So he'd walk every day over across the street, stumbling along, you know, just, and if he fell, you know, I remember, I think it was Dick Morey, Dick was our neighbor, and Irene, and then one day, Don fell in the middle of the street, and of course they came along and helped him up. And he said, well, who are you? And he said, well, we're one of the Moreys. Well, he said, I don't need any goddamn help from the Moreys. And that was the end of that, you know. But Don was a funny person. He was all right. He didn't hurt anyone. He was nice. When we were young, we made a lot of money. We went out and picked berries on the mountain. We'd go up the fills and pick the blackberries in their fields. And then we'd come down and we'd sell them to Don Warner's wife, Lois Scoville. But she had a lot of help. She had all the Scandinavian people in the house in those days. There were two or three in the kitchen. And we picked these little strawberries, you know, wild strawberries. And we could always sell them there. Blueberries, strawberry, anything we could sell there. And we made money to go to the drugstore where you could buy a Sunday or something else, you know. And then I tell people about, well, my brother, see, I had a brother who was killed in the war in Korea.
What's his name?
Donald Clayton, whose name was my father. But he was really, my brother and Kenny Farrell were like brothers, and they were always into trouble. I mean, they were either burning the Warner's fence down, or they were burning their fields down. And then one time, they were put in jail, Kenny and my brother. They were young. But they blew the water out of the watering kettle with firecrackers, you know, these big cherry bombs. And so they were put in jail over in Canaan one night, but it didn't bother. They just had a good time, always, the two of them, you know. But we had a lot of fun when we were young people. We had, as I say, probably a good 50 young people on our street. We had the Marxists. And we had the Sedans, we had the Brazies, we had all the Webs, we had the Doties, we had the four or five Moreys, and ourselves, the Pickards, the Farrells, and the Lovetts, all on that street, you know. And it looked, when we were young, like Railroad Street does today, you know, just shanties with the windows out and everything, but that's where we all lived. And we would go over to George Selleck's fields. They were behind our house, and where Bam and Audrey live now. That's the old Selleck house. And that was all cow pasture, all the way down through there. And we had a ski jump on one hill, and we had our golf range on the other hill. We'd go over with a lawnmower, and then we had a baseball field there. And we'd go over and we'd play. And if we lost, we would take the high part going back home up on the hill, and then we'd get to the top of the hill and start throwing stones down on the kids from Factory Street, because they couldn't throw them up. Then we'd always get fighting, always get fighting. So, you know. And in the winters, we had loads of skating. Everybody went out skating in the winter's evening. You could.
In Lakeville?
No, Salisbury. We hardly ever went to Lakeville.
Yeah. Where I've heard that. We never knew.
It was when I was older, when we went to the movies in Lakeville. But we didn't usually, you know, we didn't go into Lakeville. We had a playground here in the summer that Frances Warner and, what's her name, Jane Hoshkes, they used to run it.
Where was it?
It was at the Grove School, the old grammar school.
Which is?
Well, that's gone now. It's across from Ward Smith, you know, the Salmon Kill builders that opened. There was a big old white schoolhouse there, two-story. And that's where we went to school, and that's where we had our playground. But we didn't go much to Lakeville. I mean, that was the...
Where'd you skate then?
We would skate down here near the ski jump. There was a frog pond there, and that would freeze first. And then we would go up to Erickson's on Bunker Hill, because that would freeze. And then later on, we could come to the factory pond right near the house. But you had to wait, because that was deep, and it was the mountain brook, and that didn't freeze as soon as... But the frog ponds, lots of times, they were frozen by Thanksgiving. And then... In the winter, there'd be whole groups of us. I mean, we'd go out with, like I say, 20, 30 more and slide. And sometimes the Erickson's would pull us up the hill with their trucks. You know, we'd hook our sleighs on the back, and we'd get up top by their farm, and we could come all the way down into the street, and a lot of time right across the street, because we didn't have the traffic. You know, but we always had something to do. And but we would almost always get fighting. I mean, when we played cards at night and my mother had to go to work, we would really get fighting, and then she'd have to get up and take the cards away, and that'd be the end of the game, you know. But no matter what we were doing, somehow we always got fighting, all of us. It was funny. And,
how many brothers and sisters did you have?
Well, I had a sister that died, and then I have three sisters now. I have an older one who lives in Puerto Rico.
What's her name?
Keora. Giuseppe, and my grandmother, or Ostrander. And then I have one, Mary Lou, who lives in Sharon, and then Linda.
Mary Lou who?
Mary Lou Orth, her name is now, and Linda Roddy. She lives in Kent, and she's the youngest. She's only 40. So. But,
now, where is Factory? I mean, I know where it is, but we have to think of in the future for people
that come to you. Factory Street was what they call Washanee now, isn't it, Washanee?
Yeah, it starts right at the town hall and goes up,
yes, yeah. Because, you see, there was the factory where Babs McLean lives now. That was there when we were kids, a little red brick building that's been torn down. And then the next one, there was an old, old one, down next to where, Stoker's. There's just a water wheel there now, or where the water comes down through. But the one of the real original ones was there, and that burned. And then the one when we were young people were right across from where you go up on Roaring Oaks Road, where the Salisbury Artisans are now. But gee, that, all of them, when I was a kid, I think they employed probably at least 20 people. And we can remember the logs they said would come from South America, these great big, huge trees. I think they said it was coca-cola wood or some they had for the knives. And they would always be on the lookout for these spiders, you see, that would be in the wood. I forget, but they could kill you. So when we were little kids, we would go down there, and we'd watch them. They have regular sawmill, and they'd saw these big logs up into boards. Then they had a little train we used to ride on it, back and forth, you know, just by pushing. And they'd take the boards down to the factory, and then they went through a planer. And then they had a place where they were cut up, and then they were dyed. You know, they put in this dye to color them or something. Go down there.
Nice. Roaring Oaks Road. Now, how do you, if you come up now Washington and you go past the Phil Warner, all those buildings, then the road dips and goes up.
Oh, you're way down. Or you're going up Selleck Hill.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, where's the old road when we were young went in front of the Stoker House. That was where Kenny Farrell lived. The Farrells and the Higginses lived there. You know, John Higgins and that was their grandfather and grandmother's house. And the road went right in front of that house along the pond and came out in front of the factory. And then, probably 25 years ago or something, they built the new road up on the hill. But then where it used to come out by the factory is where you turned and went into Rolling Oaks. But that used to be called Locust Avenue, And then when all the locusts died, there was a blight, you know, and the locusts died. There were beautiful locusts on that street when we were young. And then they started calling it Roaring Oaks, because if you get up in the winter and hear those oaks, you want to hear some noise when the winds begin to roar through those things in the winter, because it just, it's unbelievable the noise it makes.
So I'd love to hear that.
So the people just called it Roaring Oaks. Mm-hmm. But I think now it's turned back to Locust Avenue, or Locust Lane.
Locust Lane.
Locust Lane now. Yep, they changed it again. So, but there we had a night, on our street, we had the Morys. There was Dick Morey, and he lives up on Rigel Lane now. And there was his sister, two sisters, another brother. I forget, they've all moved away. And then we had the nice old black lady, Mrs. Banks, who used to always take care of us. I mean, she worked for the Fords and all the different people, cooking and things like that. She's a wonderful old lady. And we'd do her gardening. And, you know, she'd give us a penny or two, which was a lot of money. But if our parents had to work, or we didn't have food, she was sure we had something to eat. And then we had the awful German people. Well, he was Indian, and she was German, Mrs. Burns, I forget her main name, but they were Germans, or she was. And during the war years, you know, you had the people going up and down the street for blackouts. Well, they refused to put their lights out. They were the only neighbors in the neighborhood, you see, because she was German, and she just, they wouldn't do it, you know. I can remember that. They just wouldn't. All of us, we had dark black curtain shades that you pulled, you know, if you had a light on or something. But they would patrol the streets to see that everybody turned their lights off. You know.
They must have been hated.
Oh, they were. They were. Nobody liked them at all. No, because then the other people were very nice. The McLens, Charlie and Stell lived down in the back. And then Hattie Bennett, Jimmy Lampson's mother, lived up there. So. But everybody else was wonderful, but not. And they stayed pretty much to themselves, really they did. But then Mrs. Banks passed away, and her godchild got the house. And she used to do church work in New Jersey, Mount Clair, and they would come up. Probably, sometimes she had 13, 14 young people were there. Every weekend, she'd bring all these young people from New Jersey, nice kids. And then we all went off the lake together, finally, you know. We would go down there. But now, I don't know what's happened. The house is falling down. The Burns have moved away. Hattie's in a nursing home in Torrington. And Charlie and Stella, they're gone. And the whole street has changed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a very quiet little street. It was nice. You could go down through the woods and you would come out on Grove Street. It was right above the White Hart. And so you took the shortcut to school. And that's where we got our water. We didn't have running water. And every night when we came home, you had the first. My mother, of course, cleared the whole woods. She cut all the trees for the furnace. See, my father didn't do anything. No, he was lazy. He just drank, and that was it. And he didn't work. He used to, when they first got married, my mother said he did work. He worked at Alvoid's Island for old Mrs. Alvoid up there. But that was only a few years, and then after that, he never worked again.
Where did she work?
Well, my mother used to, well, for years, she used to walk to the bottom of Smith Hill, where the Ortizes live now. And there was a chicken farm. The Brewster sisters owned that. And she used to pick chickens.
She walked from
there? She walked there, and she said she got a penny of chicken. And then you walked home at night.
Up Smith Hill at night.
Yeah, and then you walked home at night. She said, but she said when she was a little girl, like 14 years old, she used to walk up to the old, the Thorns house. That's been torn down. That's, Rich Emerson bought it. The old Thorn house was a great big old yellow house that sat there.
On a silent.
Yeah. She used to walk there to work. And she would wait on the table, and things weren't right, they would pull the tablecloths and things right off, and you'd have to do it all again. She said they were the meanest people you ever worked for. She said you had to work. She was 14. Then she worked at the chicken farm. Then later on, she worked at Kimberly's store. You know where Buddy Trotter's is? That was a little country store where that was the only thing we had. That was before Shagway, when they added on. And the Kimmelys, they lived up on Bunker Hill, Charlie and Delia, and there was one other brother. But they were very, very nice. And during the war years, we were very lucky because we could get sugar and we could get butter. But we did a lot of times. We had the stamps because we were, you know, my mother had children, so you could get more. And that's when my mother said, my little sister, Linda, she was only 6 or 7 years old, I guess. And the Nobles, Mrs. Noble from Sharon, mm-hmm. and her husband, they used to come over to Kimberly's store here in Salisbury. And they wanted to adopt her. Because, you know, she was, I guess, a cute little girl. And they didn't have any family, really, the Nobles. And I said to her, and I keep teasing her now, I said, look at Linda, you would never have to work again, you know. But the Kimmelys and Delia had an antique shop up above the store years ago. And then Stubb Sherwood, old Stubb, was their chauffeur. I can remember he used to drive them from, you know, Bunker Hill down. And then he was the gardener chauffeur for them. They sold it. They wanted my mother to buy it, but you see, we were too little. My mother had, you know, now 4 little children, and she couldn't handle it. So we weren't old enough. So I think they sold it to Louis Trotter. Mm. I think Louis got it, and then Louis sold it to Bill Ford. He named it Shagroy, and then Bill sold it to, what's his name? The son lives out in California. Oh, can't think of their name. They lived up in the Lubashir house on Belgo Road.
Yeah.
All right, well, anyway. Then I guess they sold it to Morris Prickman and...
Morris sold it to George Ernst.
To George, right.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah. Yeah, that was that.
Tell me about you. You went to grammar school, then you went mm-hmm. to high school regional.
And I was kept back in first grade. Because, you know, Molly McCone,
mm-hmm.
her mother was our teacher, Minnie T. McCone. And I can remember, I did enjoy school then. And I can remember her taking all of us, you know, she had 2 grades. And, you know, we would have to sit for music lessons. We would have to do all these things. And she would take each one of us aside and teach us how to read with our eyes and things, you know, whatever. She was very good. Then we went on into Lakeville in third grade. And I didn't have Mrs. Lemoyne.
Did you walk?
No. Then we came down to the Grove School, and where Ward Smith, right across the street, we would get the bus. You know, we would always get the bus, and we would, lots of mornings, if it was snowing, we would try to, the bus would get stuck coming around that corner, Conklin Street, and all of us would get on the back of it and keep pushing it into the woods more and more so it wouldn't get out, you know. And then we would often sit on top of the hill by the Hanging Rock, and we'd see the bus there and starting to go, and then we would run like crazy pretending we were trying to catch it, you know. And so my aunt, because my aunt lived at the bottom of the hill, so we, then she'd say, oh, they tried to catch the bus, but of course we didn't. And then we had a nice neighbor, Jesse Maury's wife, who used to write all our excuses when we played hooky, because my mother, you never told my mother a thing. You know, if you got hit in school, you didn't tell her, or you got hit when you got home, you really got it. So we never said how bad we were, you know. So she would write all our excuses. Then I went to live with the Worthingtons. I don't know if you know Bill and Margaret Worthington at Kent School. their children, Patsy was at Radcliffe, and Billy, I think, was at Bowdoin or Bates. And they wanted someone to live there. And so I had a wonderful time. They're still very good friends. And then I went to regional from Kent. And so that's where I know all my Kent friends from, because I lived in Kent 4 years. And then I went to the Yukon for 2 years to take up, landscaping. It's not landscaping, but it's a 2-year course.
So I was going to ask you how you got into this.
Well, how I got into this was very interesting. When I was living with the Worthingtons, and they were very good. And, you know, I always worked. Even when I was in Kent, I would work after school and on weekends. But they got me a job with Mrs. Schrumpeter in Taconic at Windy Hill, where Mrs. Baldwin lives. That was the old nursery. I have a wonderful photograph of that I should give to the Historical Society. But she taught at Radcliffe, and he taught at Harvard. And I started summers there, working. And then I took a year off from school after I graduated high school, and I worked the whole year for her, and she passed away. Her husband had passed away a few years before, and then she left me, I think it was a couple $1,000, so that I went on the Yukon, which was a lot of money in those days. But anyway, I had a wonderful letter from her, you know, recommending me, because I had gone on in the winters. After that, I used to work here doing gardening, and then I would go into Altman's in New York, and I'd work in the toy department from Thanksgiving till Christmas, and it was a lot of fun, it really was. And then I would take off and go either to California, or I worked 2 winters in Florida as a waiter, and I worked 2 winters in Washington, D.C. in a flower shop. Because, you see, there wasn't much work here in the winter. You could do gardening 9 months of the year, just about. And then I worked, then I did come back and I worked in 2 winters at the flower shop in New York. And then I opened the business in Sharon.
Growing up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but that's how I got started. Well, I'd always been doing gardening since we were young. You know, I would help my grandfather. My grandfather did it. My cousin Calvin did it. They would all be mowing lawns. And so we would all go out and help. So it was.
Now you're a real honest to God Raggy. Honest to God Raggy.
Oh, yeah. I was even born right here. I wasn't, but my mother, we were all born in town, not in the hospital. You see, I was born where Johnny Keeler lives now on Conklin Street. And right next to the cemetery, there used to be an old shanty there. My grandmother and grandfather owned the house in front. And my father and mother lived in the back. And my mother was always very nice, even though they never approved of her marriage to my father. You know, he was too good to work. That was my father's problem. And he'd been raised that way by his mother. You know, he was better than, my grandmother always thought she was better than everybody else anyway. And then, of course, my grandfather, on the other side, didn't like my father. So they never had much to do with my mother, and they never helped her. I when I look at the town records and I see that my grandfather had charged my mother $500 for that less than a half acre back in 1939, which was an awful lot of money. In Salisbury. I mean, you could have probably bought a huge house for that price. And then she, it cost her, I think, $3,500 to build that house. But, my mother was very good, and I can remember she always took a few dollars to put towards every mortgage. I mean, and I was saying to people when Sid Coles passed away, and who was the other one? Sid and Dolan. It was the same when I started out. I didn't have very much to start, but I think I started $500, you know. But I did have this property that I had picked up. And but they would just say to you, both of them, just pay me what you can each month. I mean, I owed, said Gold, probably $2,000 or $3,000 sometime. If you gave, said $25 a month, that's all I care. As long as you, and that's the way they treated everybody. Sam Woodbeck, same way. Sam would lend money. I'm sure he didn't get a lot of it back from people, but Sam was the same way, you know. And I say, I can remember Sam, and we used to think we were very smart because, you know, we were always stealing things at Sam's, at the drugstore, my brother and Kenny and all the rest of us. But I'm sure Sam saw us doing it, you know. When I think back now, you know, he couldn't help but notice us, you know. But he never said anything. I mean, he was very good about it. The way we were, you know, as young people, the way we were brought up, you know, because...
Do you think that, this is an awkward way to put it, but you've come quite a distance in your life
from
being a genuine raggy.
Oh, well, certainly. But, you know,
How come? Is it your ambition?
Well, it's my ambition. My mother was the same way, I'm sure, and my grandfather, but except the only thing, my grandfather had a terrible gambling problem and drinking problem, my mother said. When they were young, they have a beautiful car one day and a fur coat, she would, and then nothing the next day. And my grandfather was a bookkeeper, and, you know. But, no, and the thing is, I think what has helped me is that I love a challenge. You know, that's the whole thing, is that if I'd had things easier, it wouldn't have happened. But when somebody says you can't do something, you know, then, and I've said to people, I said, gee, the Raggies are doing all right now, a lot of them. I mean, you got the Paynes over here who own a great deal, and you've got the other ones who are pretty well off when you think, when they had nothing. All of them, you know, came from very, very little.
Yeah.
When we were young, people...
You remember I was saying to you the other day that term in the Lakeville Journal, Mountain Mafiosi.
Yeah.
I think, or don't you think, a lot of them have got a bum rap, bad reputation.
Yeah. Because, you see, most of them aren't like that. You've got, like, Sherwood's, Lois Payne, and Stubby. They're all old Sacketts from the mountain. Their family all came from the mountain. They're all old Raggies. They're Rossiters. You know, of the Thurstons. You know, I don't think the Maurys, they've lived here a while, and of course, they were born here, but I think they came much later, the Maurys. Of course, the only thing is they were related to the Franks, and the Franks are an old Raggy family, too. So, but a lot of them, you know, never behaved like this, like they're doing now. You know, they were very proud people. You know, very proud people. So, I don't remember, fighting with, you know, like we did and neighbors did, but nothing else. You know, burning somebody's place down or trying to kill somebody or people like that.
I've heard it said that under Bill Barnett all those years, the phrase I've heard used around town was, he kept them in their place.
Well,
do you think there's any truth to that?
Well, I'm sure Bill did, and I'm sure, see, Bill always figured he didn't have to worry about the group of people, the Raggies or any of them, because they weren't the ones who kept them in power. They were not. And I always find this in Salisbury, it doesn't matter what party you're on, that you can be Republican or a Democrat, but there's a certain group that will keep you in power, and they do it, you know, and...
certainly has been true.
Yeah, it really doesn't matter if you're Republican or a Democrat. It's,
who runs the town.
Yes. You can tell.
You think the town's changed a lot? Since you grew, I don't mean from the time you were a child, but in the last 20 years.
It has changed a lot, but you know, I often think, you know, people get upset with city people. And I often think that, see, I worked for mainland city people, Miss Moorhead. They were all from Brooklyn. All these people that came here in the 40s. Who else? Mrs. Mueller, the Peels, all these people came out of Mrs. Bracken, Cornwall. They all came out of the city. But I find it still the same today. These people are willing to pay a decent wage to people here. And because I can remember when we were young, you could only work for certain people. I mean, there were only certain people that hired people, and they did not pay money to anyone. I mean, they just didn't. It's only been with the city people moving into this area that the wages have really gone up. I mean, we did lawns for $2 an hour. Now people are, you know, people are doing on $75, you know, but that was on, you know, but it's only because of the people that have moved out of the city, and they do realize. But I think another thing is that the local people have always wanted to keep other people down. The people who have it do not want people to have their independence. They would love to have them dependent on them. And you know, I am outspoken, but it's the same I felt when they were talking about the low-cost housing. I felt that a few people saying they don't want government aid because the government can control it a little, are denying a lot of people a place to live. This could have been done long ago, like the other towns have done, and they don't have much of a problem in Camden or Kent or any place. But it's just that they would like to control who moves into these places. And it was the same when they were going to use the land up Factory Street. Well, the people who got together to buy down here the old Ashman place were all the people who were wealthy on Factory Street in Silicon Hill. They got $100,000 together and donated this piece of land because they didn't want low-cost housing up near them. And that's my opinion, and I will always say it is. And I didn't like it when, you know, they took Charlie Ashman's house away from him. I can remember the morning. I'm a broker. I'm a real estate broker. I don't do a lot of it, but I had the listing on the Railroad Street property, I had the listing on the Lower Cobble Road, and I had the listing on Grove Street, Echo Street, the three houses that Charlie had. And I remember the one down on Railroad Street. It had been on the market about 1 week. I think they wanted around $10.5 for it. They took $8.5 from it for the village, from the village housing. And I can remember the morning George Bushnell came in to Anna at the drugstore and said, well, we got it. And I have always been upset because I told Jack Rogers and the others at the bank, since they were handling, and Buddy Trotter, they were handling his affairs, and I said, I thought if you were handling somebody's affairs, you would try to get the best deal you could, and you don't sell something after a week. And it was the same with the piece on Echo Street. I had shown it to Don and Lorraine Stevens, and they were going to put a bid on it. They were asking, I think, about 19 at the time, and they took that off. And then about a year later, it was purchased by Family Services, so at 19. But I just felt they wanted Charlie's property and just they put him away. You know, which it's very sad to think that, you know, because Charlie was not easy, he was difficult. He was a very difficult person to get along with, no doubt. But when I was young, there were loads of difficult people in town and loads of people who sat on the street corner. We used to have Stella Sackett. She would come down from the mountain. And my God, she was like an old witch. You know, all in rags, and she'd sit along the street and everything. Nobody bothered her. And then there was Miss Swift. She would come down. She was an old school teacher. She'd go down to her cousin there in the Parsons's. And she would sit along the street, and nobody bothered anyone. People would sit on the town hall steps. They'd sit behind it. I mean, they didn't carry on maybe the way that the kids carry on today. I mean, they were a little I mean, they were decent. I mean, they didn't use it as a bathroom or, you know, things like that, like some of them have been doing. And they didn't make love on the church steps and things like that. So I can see why they don't like some of that. But, I mean, people always sat on the town hall steps. But I don't know. It's, I am very outspoken because I've seen, and I, especially with zoning, I know we have to have it, and it's good in many ways, but I hate the way it's run, and that certain people get something and other people don't. They can't, because they don't have a lawyer to fight it, to get it. If they had a little money, and they could go to court, then they too would win. And, you know, I think when I see, I lived in Sharon while I had the shop. I lived there 20 years in the back apartment, and I'd come here in the summer. But zoning came into Sharon later, much later than Salisbury. But even now, they have people on the board who, you know, give a little. You can see the difference. I mean, the zoning in Sharon about home industries in parts of towns. That, you know, there's a little give, and there should be. I mean, after all, you know. But it just depends. It's too bad.